Welcome to the July 9th edition of Irish Illustrated Insider with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. I'm Tim Priester and Pete Sampson from The Athletic. I want to warn you guys that I'm going to shut you down as soon as I hear you clicking your pen again during these podcasts. So just fair warning ahead of time. No, that's me that's been doing that, and my hands are tied to my sides. Notre Dame COVID testing.
Elite.
Looking up. I was going to say positive, and you don't want to use that word, but things are positive for Notre Dame because they had all negative tests recently on July 1st when they did the COVID-19 test. Notre Dame will now move into phase two. Joe Alt verbally committed to Notre Dame. And we'll talk about fall football schedule and whether that includes Michigan or not, which there are some rumors out there. And then, of course, Stanford having to cancel some sports. But a very positive sign that for at least at Notre Dame. Of course, they need healthy opponents in order to play football. But zero positive tests out of the last 100+ here recently.
The signature win.
This is the one. That's the big one, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the test came on July 1st. I think O'Malley and I were texting about this last week. Like, I'll be curious to see what the next round of tests, because it would involve the July 4th weekend, which is, you know, much more of a social event if you're college age than just working out on campus. But you know, Notre Dame has done. They've sort of kept it under control, which is impressive. I mean, you see when Ohio State shuts down, North Carolina shuts down.
Kansas.
And I think it really gets to one of those questions that we didn't really get answers. It's like, what's the threshold where you can't proceed forward? You know, if Notre Dame had three tests or four tests that are positive, would they still be able to keep going? I would think so, but I don't, you know, Clemson is in the 20s and 30s. And they're still practicing.
37.
But, you know, it's Ohio State is much in the single digits, I believe, for football, and hit pause. So Notre Dame is, I guess, the best solution is to have zero.
So Tim, Notre Dame goes into phase two now. They went from groups of 10 to 30 and 40, which is the big step up. You can get a lot accomplished with 30, 40 guys working at the same time.
Yeah, it sure can. And as Pete said, hopefully it wasn't too much of a – I don't know how many guys got away from their groups for the 4th of July weekend, but that was probably the chance to do it. I mean, we saw pictures of the running backs all together at Lance Taylor's house, and Jack saw coaches fishing at the lake and things like that. So I think they're, you know, obviously they're being more careful. They're really taking it. Their methods are working. The methods, I'm sure these other schools had methods, but you had to get the players to follow them. The key now is if they can get through that initial conditioning phase where Brian Kelly mentioned, look, we can't just hit the ground running. We are not anywhere near the physical condition we need to be in, because no matter what, I mean, he's right. No matter what they did, no matter how studious they were with their workouts, you can't be. It's not football shape. So the assimilation period has to be taken seriously. And then you get to start hearing some good stuff about what they're doing in terms of kind of preparing for a real training camp.
And I don't know what the objection was to the student athletes coming back to the campuses, because if you had a whole bunch of positive tests, that happened while they were home. So they're going to an environment where you had a better chance to get them healthy and stay healthy, but still a long way to go. We'll continue to speculate about that. But Notre Dame did get a verbal commitment from Joe Alt, the son of John Alt, a two-time Pro Bowler, 13-year veteran of the Kansas City Chiefs. I think those are bloodlines that work well in Notre Dame's favor. I think Joe Alt's going to be a fine offensive lineman in time. He has to catch up weight-wise. It was the first Notre Dame verbal commitment in about 3 months. They've had a couple of offensive commitments, both along the offensive line. They haven't had a skill position athlete on offense verbally commit in 9 months. But Joe Alt, I think long-term, is going to be a good football player. He has all the ingredients to be that. He has good feet. He has great length. He's just going to need to fill out that frame.
I mean, I think it's worth looking over, okay, who are the three-star offensive linemen that have signed with Notre Dame under Brian Kelly? This is the list. Nick Martin, Brad Carrico, Connor Hanratty, Mark Harrell, Trevor Rulin, Parker Boudreau, Dylan Givens, John Dirksen, Luke Jones, Cole Mayberry, Alt, and then Pat Coogan. It's hard to make it at Notre Dame if you're if you're a developmental prospect on the offensive line, I think in some ways Ault is sort of like the an Ade Ogundeje kind of prospect where you're really underweight, but like there's some good genetic material to work with there in terms of height and length and athleticism. But it's just tough to get there on the offensive line because Notre Dame is you're a tackle coming in and out of the class after you had Tosh Baker and Michael Carmody. And you maybe if you consider Blake Fisher to be a tackle, you've got to deal with that as well. But in terms of if you're going to take a developmental offensive lineman, I think that Ault is a good one to take.
You might as well take the son of a 13-year NFL veteran.
Yeah. And it's like, look, his dad played at Iowa, and that's probably why Iowa was hot after him. But Iowa is one of those schools, like if they want an offensive lineman that's developmental, like I just take their work and run with it myself. Like that's a good about. I just sort of take their evaluation as like, yeah, that's good. If Iowa wanted him, we want him.
For what it's worth, I think there's a good chance that if everything being equal and everybody plays football this year, high school and college, I think Ault will probably reach the 4-star level. There's some rumblings about that happening right now, just because, I mean, if you watch him play, you can see that he's fundamentally sound. And when he just adds weight to that, he's got good feet. You know, he has a tight end's feet, which is what his father was until, you know, into his college career. But points well taken, Pete, because 3-star offensive linemen are going up against great competition at Notre Dame. You know, high four-star offensive linemen many times, and it's difficult to succeed.
It's tough no matter what, though. When you say developmental prospect, like Josh Lugg finally started a game last year because Robert Hainsey got hurt, and he was a junior going into his senior year now. Yeah. I mean, Joe Ault's not going to be ahead of that curve, right? Josh Lugg came in a lot more ready to play. Liam Eichenberg didn't sniff the field whenever we thought he was – remember Robert Hainsey and Kramer, sure, were they rotating?
Yeah.
They all take at least 2 years. So if Joe Ault takes 3.5 instead of 3, like Josh Lugg, that's fine. As long as you develop at some point where you're thinking, man, that guy's going to be a good fifth-year player and a fourth-year starter, it's okay to have a guy like Joe Ault. But not many guys are – I mean, you got to be really good to come in and play as a redshirt freshman, right?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, I mean, that's where we have
a five-star prospect playing as a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, that's year two. I mean, year three is right after that. It takes a bit.
We're hearing changing topics, moving on to the next one. We're hearing that we are expecting Notre Dame by the middle of this month to say, hey, this is going to be the schedule for this fall. Now, the news at Ohio State, the news at Ohio State, them shutting down their workouts, I don't know if this will, and other schools maybe making an announcement the next week that they're going to do the same thing. I don't know if that will alter Notre Dame's fall schedule football plans. I don't know exactly what that fall schedule is going to be. We're going to speculate about how many games there will be. Pete, have you heard anything about that on your end about Notre Dame and the middle of this month stating what the schedule is going to actually be?
Yeah, I don't know the timing necessarily. I know they're really kicking the tires on, okay, if you were scheduled to play a Big Ten team non-conference, those are the teams Notre Dame is reaching out to figure out, okay, is there something that we can make work here? I don't have any knowledge that they've reached out to BYU specifically, but that would seem fairly obvious.
That one makes sense, yeah.
But, I guess it sort of goes back to what we said 2 months ago, probably on this podcast, is just like what I think we had collectively heard is there was severe skepticism that they would be able to play USC and Stanford, and that the Wisconsin game would get moved at a minimum. I think that all sort of holds today. But there's, it's like the Western Michigan game, for example, seems like kind of a no-brainer. Western Michigan needs it. You can bus to the game. Travel is low. But, like, Western Michigan is having problems even getting into their weight room due to budget cuts and sort of issues there with what they can accomplish. So I don't really know what the schedule is going to look like. Hey, Tulane had zero positive tests, so maybe that you can get Tulane on the schedule. I think it's just going to be very grab bag right now. It's just Yeah, the idea of Notre Dame playing a 12-game schedule, I think, feels a little bit wishful right now. And I'm not even saying, like, the 12 games they're scheduled to play. I'm saying 12 games at all.
Yeah, I think we talked about it even 2 months ago that they probably won't get to 12 games because Jack Swarbrick hinted at it. He said, what will the schedule look like? It might not be complete.
That was on March 19th.
Yeah, he didn't say that for no reason. He just figured something would happen, and he's right. Something's going to happen. He applied an incredible amount of logic to the situation, and it's going to play out that way, I think. The USC and Stanford games, if those are both played, things have changed, right? If those play out in the future, things have changed since right now. So that would be – you would not bet they're playing both games, right, if you had to put your house up.
I would – Nope. I would – I'm not putting my house on anything, but I would bet.
No, you have to go one way on this
one. Oh, you do have to – okay. Yeah. Well, then I would say they're not going to play USC and Stanford. And I think right now that I think where the alterations come, you don't play Georgia Tech in the Atlanta Falcon Stadium. You don't play Wake Forest in the Carolina Panthers Stadium. Pittsburgh's Pittsburgh. They always play there. So, I mean, we're going to talk about more when we get to segment two of the questions, but to a large extent, and we're not completely guessing because we do have some intel and some insight, but nothing is firm. Now, Stanford canceling 11 sports, we're talking about the 25-year reigning Director's Cup champion. 25 years they've won the Director's Cup for the best athletics. 36 sports will now be reduced to 25. None of the 11 that were canceled won a national title in the 2018-19 school year or in the first half of 2019. But man, when a school as prominent and successful in all sports across the board as Stanford cuts 11 sports, you know that's happening elsewhere among Power Five schools.
And is well funded.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that everyone's going to lose something, right? Like that's no one is going to come out of this unblemished. I mean, it is worth noting the sports that were canceled. It's, fencing, sailing, squash. I think men's volleyball was canceled from that group. It's not, it's not we're cutting women's basketball and men's soccer.
Right.
But, for Stanford that like has a cultural identity of, I think I was reading that 11% of students there are varsity athletes at the college level, which is crazy. Yeah. Maybe it's 12%. That really cuts to what Stanford tries to be all about. So that's significant from an identity standpoint for sure.
I think there'll be a trickle down effect within the Pac-12 because Pac-12 schools tend to have more sports.
It is part of their identity too, the Pac-12.
That's no doubt.
So is that a terrible topic for podcasts? What happened when we just used to complain about like backup offensive linemen and
football recruiting? We can go back to complaining about football recruiting.
We'll be doing that soon. It's just a very sad. Imagine this conversation in January after the Camping World Bowl talking about 10 game seasons, not playing USC and Stanford canceling sports.
Yeah, we were having a discussion about should they move the game from Dublin or not? I don't know.
I don't know. Will they move it away? Well, in fairness, we were all pretty much like, yeah, they're probably moving that game.
So yeah,
that was our first hit.
All right. We have a bunch of questions for segment two. We'll be back with burning up the boards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Segment two, burning up the boards. We start with a question from the real Josh Heddle. If you could compile a staff of former Brian Kelly assistants to make a current staff, how would it look? We'll go one by one here, starting with what do you want to start with? We'll start with quarterbacks.
I don't have a quarterback answer, so I went outside the box for my entire 10-man team here. I would have Bob Elliott coach the quarterbacks because nobody else has done a good job.
Chuck Martin was the quarterback's coach at one point.
I'm moving him somewhere else. I have a plan.
All right. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Pete, who do you have?
I think I'd have to go with Chuck Martin. Like initially, I read this question, I was going to pair it with current assistants, and then I realized that for the most, which maybe says something or maybe doesn't, but like I think I picked out seven assistants from the current staff that I would have on it. But yeah, since I'm precluded from selecting Tommy Rees here.
You are precluded from doing that. Yes, you're not allowed.
I'm going to have to go with Chuck Martin.
Yeah, I was kind of half joking with Elliot because I wanted him on staff, but I would have Chuck Martin as the quarterback coach or Elliot as the special teams coach or vice versa because they're the two best overall coaches I can find to put on the staff that just need to be on the staff somehow.
Mm.
Yeah, I would go with – why can't you go with Tommy Rees?
Well, I think we're just talking about former –
I was saying the podcast would get blow up or something like that if you went with Tommy Rees.
But I misread it too.
No, would go with Rees. I mean, if I could choose all of them, I would go with Rees.
I think we should change the question and be able to choose from the current staff. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I think he means the current staff too.
Yeah, he may. Okay, Josh, we're going to change it.
And yes, we can include Chuck Barker's out. Tommy Rees is in.
Tommy Rees is in. And I know a lot of people will object to that, but if you think about who were the quarterback coaches at Notre Dame, I would choose Tommy Rees.
I might choose Chuck Martin.
Well, I'm going to put him on defense, I think, but yeah. Sanford and LaFleur, and I know LaFleur's a head coach in the NFL, but
you're taking his time at Notre Dame.
Right. Upon the 1 year, one and done year at Notre Dame and Charlie Molnar. I mean, I would choose Tommy Rees. Right?
I would not choose Charlie Molnar. So we can move on from there. That's good.
All right, running backs. We're probably unanimous here.
Alford.
Yeah, I had another plan for this one. I was going to have Lance Taylor, our running backs coach, and Tony Alford, my wide receivers coach. So I have them both on staff recruiting.
Okay, that's fair. I'd pick Alford.
Alford had a wide receiver become an MVP in TJ Jones.
Well, that's right. He
and
yes,
Michael Floyd twice.
When he was briefly, a wide receivers coach. Yeah. Tight end / wide receivers, pass catchers.
Well, I'm just doing a tight ends coach, and I'm rehiring Chip Long.
Yeah, me too. He's going to listen to these. There are not going to be any fights with my coaching staff.
Who's your offensive coordinator?
Chip Long.
Okay. Players' opinions be damned, right?
Well, no, because it's going to change a little. I assume we all have the same offensive line coach, right?
Yeah, I'm sure we all have Harry Heistand as the offensive
Chip Long with Harry Heistand, Lance Taylor, Tony Alford, and we'll say Tommy Rees or Chuck Martin. You think that he's going to have that strong of a personality overrunning that entire operation with those guys that he would respect?
Yeah, I think Mike Denbrock was a good enough coach to be a position coach.
Yep.
Maybe you don't want him as your play caller per se. Defensive side, defensive line. I think we're
don't even say that.
There's only one other option. So Mike Elston's our choice at D line. Linebackers is where I put Bob Elliott.
I was sticking with Clark Lee there.
I would stick with Clark Lee too.
Elliott's
my special teams coach now.
I have Clark Lee as a defensive coordinator. I mean, we're fudging the lines here, obviously.
All right, my safeties coach. Who do you guys have?
That's where Bob Elliott would fit into me.
Okay.
Or if you're not doing Chuck Martin as your quarterback's coach, I think either of those would be fine.
How about you, Tim?
Well, considering the consistency and the level of productivity of Elliott and of Jalen Elliott and Alohi Gilman, I have to go with Terry Joseph at safety.
My defensive
coordinator is Brian Van Gorder because he just did a stellar job.
My secondary coach is Kerry Coombs.
Mm.
with former Brian Kelly assistants to make up current staff.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
My recruiting staff, and I'm going to add Mike Elko on staff too. So I'm recruiting with Coombs, Elko, Elston, Lance Taylor, Alford, Chip Long. And then Harry.
I guess Elko could be your safeties coach.
Yes, he could. Exactly.
He's
exactly.
There too. He's my guy.
Yep. Yep. All right. Let's go to our second question from Irish Obsessed. How involved will and should Tommy Rees and the Notre Dame staff be regarding the third party QB coaching being provided to Tyler Buttner? This is a long sentence. It's a question about should Notre Dame control who the quarterbacks use as their quarterbacks coach away from Notre Dame?
I mean, they do now, so the answer is very.
How involved? Yes, very. I believe they should be very involved, and they should take Tim Priester's advice from two Thursday thoughts ago.
To fire Taylor Kelly.
Fire the quarterback's coach offseason, yep.
Yeah, if that hasn't happened already. Yeah, they do recommend, coaches do recommend who they should use. Taylor Kelly was recommended. Correct, Pete?
I don't know. Not by Notre Dame to Tyler Buttner, but Taylor Kelly was recommended to Brandon Wimbush by Notre Dame. You know, that was a connection that Notre Dame helped make. But Tyler Buttner started working with Taylor Kelly because he's good friends with Miller Moss, who's a 4-star quarterback going to USC.
Okay.
I don't think that had anything to do with Notre Dame necessarily. Now, coming out of the Elite 11, I'm sure Notre Dame would be like, hey, everything going okay there? You know, that's probably a conversation that you could have.
Right. And I don't know, you know, I don't know that there was anything in particular about Brandon Wimbush's delivery that was off. I mean, I don't know that I ever looked at that and said, wow, that, you know, that the elbow's here and the release point's here and the hand is facing here. He just couldn't hit a damn target.
Right. No, you know, that's a good point. I don't think a lot of people are sitting around saying, here's the issue with Wimbush. You were saying, what is the issue with Wimbush? That's a different situation. With Dracovic, you looked right away. Tim said, look, to Tim's credit, and I kind of balked at this because I felt like they weren't preparing Phil Dracovic for the New York Giants just to play college football. The first pass he threw at Culver as a true freshman, you said, what happened to his release point? And I thought to myself, so hard. And I guess partly correct. It's like, it's so hard to change what he feels comfortable with, which happened multiple times after that.
Sure.
So you were right. More right than I was, but we never saw that with Wimbush. You just thought, wow, why is he missing? And I think it was a footwork thing Chip said at some point, right? With Wimbush, a lot of it was footwork.
Yes. Timing. Yeah. Yeah. Now I don't know that I necessarily can speak to that, but as far as his delivery, I didn't think that was, that was the problem with him. With Dracovic, I mean, he was so all over the place the whole time.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he had a long, coming out of high school, he kind of pulled his arm away from his body, I thought, a little too much.
Like he whips it, almost whipping motion.
Yeah. You know, and Buttner's never really came directly over the top. Has never really come directly over the top, but it really slid down during the Elite 11, and so something has to be done there. Irish from A2, over-under on number of games Notre Dame plays this year. Over-under on number of games Notre Dame plays outside of the Midwest this year.
Well, I think as these over-under questions should always be thinking, like, if you were trying to create a line that would generate action on both sides.
Correct, yes.
Right.
I think 8.5 would be a good line to create action on both sides.
I was 9.5, but you're
9.5 would be mine also.
Yeah, but the problem with 9.5, I guess, why Pete's at 8.5 is we're already both two down if we're guessing right. So it's at 10.
Yeah,
I would probably say 9.5 for action, but Pete, 8.5 makes sense too. So we can work on both of those outside of the Midwest.
Have it be at 9.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, outside of the Midwest, there's only three options now. If we're throwing away USC from this, there's Wake, there's Pitt, and there's Georgia Tech. Oh, and Navy. There's four options, but I think Navy's going to happen.
You know, I think, and we'll get to this. I think we have a question later. And the ACC games will happen, or they'll certainly try.
Yeah. So I would they'll play their games outside. I think you set the over under at 9, and the games will still be played outside the Midwest. The games that are scheduled, they just won't be necessarily in pro stadiums.
Yeah, I think that USC is going to be the only loss there. I guess Wisconsin was in the Midwest anyway. But,
yeah.
You know, Atlanta, Charlotte, Annapolis, I guess Pittsburgh, I guess, you know.
I will trade you.
I think those will get played.
I'll trade you two trips to the southeast of Atlanta and Charlotte for one trip to LA.
No.
We know where you stand on that, Tim O'Malley.
Okay. I'm going. Doesn't matter. Speaking of which, my new favorite player. How do you say this?
Akalus.
With the update of Chris Tyree putting on good weight, is there a chance he becomes RB1?
I saw him, and I mean, he looks a good 185. And at 185, you can be a number one running back. Now, whether it happens right away, you know, you have other guys with other skills and things they can do. And I mean, hell, you got so many running backs, you got to use them.
I mean, I think it'll be committee, but I don't want to be facetious, but what are the other guys' skills that are you can point to for sure going into this year?
Jafar Armstrong's ability to catch a football, certainly.
Yes, for one. I didn't think about that. I was thinking running, you know, his running skills. Is assuming
the name of his position, you were thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way he ran before the abdominal surgery, so I'm hoping that's why he looked like he was so stiff last year when he came back. But if he looks at anything like that, he's not going to beat anybody out, right? As a running back? He had 58% of his carries were stuffed last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth – I understand what you're saying. Like, he looked good for the
– when we saw him in the spring in the previous.
Against Louisville. But we talked about this on podcasts, like, last August when you're sitting there and be like, all right, when's Jafar going to beat out Tony Jones? It never happened. And he was healthy then. So I think that, you know, it might be a little bit revisionist history, but I think you got to look back on last August and be like, did we just like sort of overvalue this one?
Well, we overvalued him because we had him very high. Doesn't mean he can't be a good running back, but we had him like,
yeah.
Pete, we were asked a question on the podcast, will he have over 1,200 total yards? And we both said over without blinking.
Yeah, I was super high on him. Yeah. And that was
amazing. I mean, he got hurt in the first game. So
right, but that's a lot of yards.
It is. I think I've said this before that I think of the group, and now Trevor Spates joins the group. I think Sebo Flemister is the most natural running back.
Now, I totally agree
with
you.
You know, I don't know. He had five rushing touchdowns and very few opportunities last year. Jamar Smith is probably, well, besides Armstrong, is fundamentally sound the least of that group.
Jamar Smith, somebody asked about him being the who's going to be the short yardage back. Jamar Smith is 1 for 6 on 3rd-and-1 last year.
They tend to give the ball to Sebo Flemister on the goal line, both in games.
Sebo's the guy that has a nose. Too. Brian Kelly even said the spring where we kind of like when Sebo kind of made a couple plays last year, but he seemed like the distant fifth because Kyron Williams was having a good spring as an early enrollee.
Yeah.
He said something about like, you know, Sebo is like the guy that just gets low and doesn't go down from first contact. Now, I don't think he has a lot of spectacular in him, but you don't need a lot of spectacular if he'll give you 12 carries of 61 yards, you know, and especially then if Chris Tyree can make an impact this year and Jafar Armstrong can catch the ball. And I agree they got to use all the guys, but I don't know what Chris Tyree has a differentiating factor I'd like to see be on the field for 15 snaps.
Mm-hmm.
If Armstrong's healthy and you have Tyree, I don't see both Flemister and Smith playing equally, right?
Right. No, I agree.
I hope I'm wrong. I've been on record saying many times that there are a lot of people that are very high on Kyron Williams, and I just don't see the skill set to be that high on him, other than as a pass receiver. So
he has looked best as a pass receiver rather than runner. Last August, yeah.
Kay Beasley, you don't hear much on voluntary workouts. Is it primarily just weights and conditioning, or is it Ian Book working on the field with receivers? It's only been up to this point, it's only been a group of 10 at a time.
it will become Ian Book working on the field with receivers. But yeah, they are in the beginning phase of it.
But he's been throwing to receivers.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And they get together on their own.
Yeah.
Bennett Skowronek went up to California during the lockdown stuff to work with Ian Book.
Right.
You know, Ian Book got together with Brock Wright and Chris Fink in Texas.
That's one of the reasons why I think Skowronek's going to play a big role is partly because of that relationship.
I think they didn't get a chance to develop
in the spring.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they have a good relationship regardless of whether the spring practice happened or not. I think they're pretty like-minded. I know Book and Skowronek spent a bunch of time together when Skowronek visited in December. I think they're very similar kind of personalities. They clearly got along. I mean, it's like the first Skowronek to go out to California is pretty significant.
Yes. Yeah.
I think people are underestimating the value of Skowronek's size. I mean, 6'3", 220 something. I think
also he's done stuff in college football games. And
yes. Some really good stuff.
He's Notre Dame's leading returning receiver.
Individually, combine all the other ones.
That's right.
He's coming up soon to the countdown. No spoilers.
Very, very soon. Question from Maddie Heebs 14. What former three-star recruit, not named Ian Book, do you feel will have the biggest contribution this season?
I would say, including Ian Book, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah will have a pretty good contribution this season.
There's a bunch to choose from.
Ade Ogundeji is
the composite.
Yeah. Ade Ogundeji, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, and Tommy Tremble are all very impactful players that are three stars. They might have more three stars in the top 15 of our countdown than four stars.
Drew White.
Yeah, I mean, that's four right there. The MTA technically a three star, or he just ease over to the four star.
He was a composite three star.
All right. Yes. I mean, that's six three stars that I can think of that are obviously in the top 15.
Heinisch.
Seven.
Skowronek.
Didn't quite make it.
Where did we list him?
He's today's. Just hopefully I'll get that out.
Okay,
yeah,
that's right.
Hopefully I get that out before we have the spoiler alert.
Okay. There's plenty to choose from. And there's a bunch of good ones.
Is that a good thing, though, what I just said, that seven of the 15 best players are three-star developmental prospects?
It's a good
thing. I know they're all veterans, so it really helps. They're veterans.
It's,
they're not
it's a good thing in terms of the job that the coaching staff is doing in developing them.
Right. Overall.
It's not in terms of competing with Ohio State and Clemson. Right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I was waiting for Pete to chime in on that one.
It's like – As I was going through counting down Notre Dame's schedule, and you're looking at Clemson, I was like, man, they lost a lot on defense. They have four five-star defensive ends that they have to figure out which one is the best. That's a place Notre Dame is not.
That is a good relevant question. Who is the best three-star on Clemson starting? Who are the five best three-stars on Clemson this year? And will they be playing a significant role like Book, Ade, Owusu-Koramoah, Tremble, and MTA?
Well, not to that extent.
No.
I mean, it's nobody at the offensive skill positions. Isaiah Simmons is gone. I think he was a three-star prospect, but
that's the greatest three-star prospect I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's Tyler Eifert and Isaiah Simmons are the best three stars.
Right. Insane ND Tucson. I'm excited to see what Ade Ogundeji can do this year in a starting role. It seems when he's in the game, he creates havoc and good things happen. Over under 7.5 sacks. I got three of them. Over under 7.5 sacks.
Under, they tend to get shared.
Yeah, under.
I agree with that. Three forced fumbles.
He actually had that last
year.
That's a lot.
Yeah, he did. That's a lot, though, in a year.
All right, let's say they play 12 games because otherwise these stats are all skewed. You know, we can't. Right. It's really hard to do. So right. I will say push. I think he forced two or three the year before, too.
I'm going to go under on all three of these.
I think the third one is
a good player and it's going to have a good season. But if he finishes with six sacks and two forced fumbles and 14 tackles for loss, I think that would still be very
15
good year.
15 and a half was the line set on tackles for loss. Man, that's a lot.
That's a big number.
That's the Kelly era record. Sheldon Day and it's more than Manti had. And I believe it is the record since Justin Tuck.
Okay.
I think Hoyt had 16 and a half somehow as a senior year, which is amazing for a guy that was also a three-star, right? And just made a great senior year out of himself. But not many guys get there, and Ade will. I'd say Ade and Ogundeje will be 9.5 tackles for loss and a solid 25 stuffs like Kareem had, you know, that type of thing where he's making plays.
I've said this a couple times, and nobody has told me this, but it just makes sense to me that, especially if Ogufo and Foskey develop, that Dalen Hayes gets some snaps over at the big end spot with Ogundeji. I mean, to me, that just makes sense. And so if that proves to be the case, then Ogundeji gets, less snaps than he would if Justin Adamiola was the backup, right?
And he's probably a better player because he's fresh and they have better 1-2 punches.
Sure. So I think 15 and a half is a lot.
Gerard, does Notre Dame have a better chance of making the Final Four and even winning a national championship if this upcoming college football season is played in the spring instead of the fall? My logic and reasoning is that schools like Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia would be most likely to have many of their top players opt out of college football in the spring because they will be high draft picks in 2021.
Pete?
I don't, you know, it's I was thinking about this question a bunch yesterday, and it's like, it certainly would help Notre Dame relative to Clemson and USC, right? But you know what happens with Ian Book or Liam Eikenberg?
Ian Book's not coming back for a 6-year. Owusu-Koramoah is going to say, you know what, I was going to leave after this year anyway. I'm leaving. I just think, okay, are there more highly rated players who are going to play in the NFL at those other schools? Yes. So are they more likely to leave and go to the NFL? What, Tim?
Yeah, there are more highly rated players at Clemson, Ohio State. However, there's all more highly rated players behind them to come up and beat Notre Dame when Liam Eikenberg, Ian Book, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, and Ade Ogundeji go pro.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, if you're Ade Ogundeji or Liam Eikenberg or Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, I think that you probably are looking to put more on tape.
They are, but like Ade even made a choice last year. I know it was a choice he never should have made, but like we asked him about it before the Camping World Bowl, and he's like, I'm going to talk to my parents. I mean, you know, he leaving would have been the most ridiculous thing, but it was in his mind. So I assume it's in his mind again.
It's such a weird set of circumstances. I don't know how you would process this if you're a pro prospect or a aspiring pro prospect.
Well, Trevor Lawrence would leave, which would help Notre Dame beat Clemson.
Certainly. Sean Crawford would leave. Dalen Hayes would leave. Those other teams would be gutted of more established players. But I just don't – I just at the end of the day – well, first of all, at the end of the day, I don't spend much time thinking about that. I mean, that's phase whatever down the road. When they cancel the fall, okay, then I start giving that a little bit more thought about who's staying and who's leaving. But even that is just a total roll of the dice in a crapshoot.
You know, this goes back to when the USFL came out a very long time ago. I just thought of this and the health of players. If you play in the spring and then you're playing in the fall, I mean, that ruined some players in that 1984 range because I think it was Mike Rozier went from Nebraska to the USFL to the Houston Oilers in like a 28-month span of playing football. A lot of guys, you can't play all spring and then play in August and September and October and November, right?
If you played a 10 – don't you think if you played a 10-game schedule in January, February, March, obviously that is your spring practice that you could still play in the fall?
You may have to.
Well, you'd be fresh. You know, I guess it's a good point that you could play football starting January 31st because you haven't played. You didn't just come off the whole season. Stuff like
right. Not yeah, like it's yeah. Like Mike Rozier. The Mike Rozier example is he essentially played three seasons in 18 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not what would be happening here.
Okay. Interesting question from Wash ND. Out of Julian Okwara, Khalid Kareem, Dalen Hayes, and Ade Ogundeji, who do you think will wind up being the best NFL player? I know who you're gonna. I knew you were gonna say that.
Okora. He has a coveted skill set.
He has a skill that's better than any one of the other ones' individual skill. I think Khalid Kareem's the better all around football player.
Me too. I do too.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that he'll have a better because of that one skill, that pass rushing skill.
Yeah. Kareem.
I would still pick Kareem just because I love the well-roundedness of his game, number one. Number two, you can't injure the guy. You can't get the guy off the field. He is the ultimate warrior on the football field, and so that's why he's my choice. But I understand where both of you are coming from in terms of that not only a great skill, but one of the most highly coveted skills in the game.
I think we have so much respect for Khalid Kareem and that he is a more well-rounded football player, but it's such a specialized game now. I mean, Julian Okora could be D4 quickly. You know, those type of players that are good at Kansas City and really good on the 49ers and they're playing in Super Bowls and having a major role in it. Khalid Kareem, I don't want to say this out loud because I already have one guy out there in my 10-year plan for the NFL, but Khalid Kareem's a guy that could play, you know, 6 to 10 years. How's that, Pete, in the NFL? And Isaac Michelle is still going strong, so.
I agree with that. I mean, I'm not going to say 10 years. No, it's hard for me to predict anybody 10 years. I'd have a hard time predicting Isaiah Simmons for 10 years just because it's just so damn long. But, I don't want to, no disrespect, but did I see Dalen Hayes' name on a preseason All-American team?
Yeah, that happened. Well, you saw Tommy Kramer's last year, too.
Yeah. You know, that's very highly touted.
Yep. It's a recruiting ranking plus a guy they've heard of still, plus total career starts, plus fifth-year senior. That's how it gets on those.
Plus great leader of the Notre Dame football program.
Great leader. In the Cotton Bowl against Clemson. I mean, there's film of him.
I just don't see the skill set that translates to the NFL, at least not for an extended period of time. Tim, go ahead.
B54, I'm glad I get to read this one. What happens with Jeff Quinn if they miss on Rocco Spindler? Will other OL offers go out, or will the staff stick with three, assuming an elite guy doesn't decommit and show interest in Notre Dame? After passing last cycle, why is Clark Lee down to Prince Kali as the only linebacker? Also, anger.
All right, let's start with Jeff Quinn. What happens to him? I don't know. They take him out back and
he wasn't on our all-time Kelly team.
No, he was not. He was not. Pete, what happens to Jeff Quinn if they don't get Rocco Spindler?
I think he's going to get the side eye on a bunch of message boards.
But I think the question is, as it relates to his employment at the University of Notre Dame.
Like, I think this reminds me of a loose emoji question of Brian Kelly about TJ Jones. And it was about like him being punished after the house party in like 2011 or something. And Lou was like, hey, so like, what was the punishment? And Kelly was like, do you want to know if we like spanked him? Is Jeff Quinn going to have to like do up downs in the office? Probably not.
He's also not going to get fired.
No, it will be a bad recruiting cycle for Notre Dame on the offensive line when it should have been a great one. And I think it would hurt Notre Dame's credibility that, you know, Jeff Quinn is bringing more to the recruiting table than what Harry Hiestand was, which was sort of how that was advertised doesn't have the expertise as like a technical guy, but like could be an upgrade in recruiting that would sort of call that into question.
I think there are probably 7 or 8, I might be wrong, regular Notre Dame podcasts, right, that publish a lot. He will lead off every single one of them. That's what will happen to Jeff Quinn if they don't get Rocco Spindler. That will be the exact repercussion for him.
And the second question about Prince Kali and him being the only linebacker after not getting any last year. So next year, Drew White and Bo Bauer will be down to 1 year. Jordan Jenmarkeith will be gone. Owusu Koromoa could be gone or down to 1 year. Paul Mawala will be down to 1 year. I mean, Shane Simon will be down to 1 year.
This is why I had Mike Elko on my staff, by the way. when we did our little Brian Kelly thing.
Why is that? Because he made sure that there was never a shortage of linebackers?
We can recruit.
Oh.
He goes out and gets them.
Yeah, I have to wonder, and the next question involves Prince Kali, and I'll say it right now. I think Notre Dame will end up signing Prince Kali. But it just does seem like it's getting to be a pretty skimpy group unless you're intending to move some safeties up to the next level, and I don't think they're going to be in a position to do that either.
Yeah, I don't have an explanation for the linebacker. I know Notre Dame is confident in sort of where they stand with it, but just in terms of a numbers game, it's pretty light.
Well, you better totally believe in Osita Ekwonu, JD Bertrand, Maris Leofau, and Jack Kaiser.
Yeah, I mean that's part of it that we just. I know Kaiser was one of those guys that when he showed up, the staff was like, "Oh, okay, this is a steal." They were very high on him from the get go, so maybe that makes the Rover position less essential. To be fair, their scholarship numbers right now in terms of the 85 man limit, there's not a lot of wiggle room. Like in some ways I'm confused about the second tight end. I would rather that go somewhere else, but it's not like they have room to just sign as many defensive prospects as they want. And they're hurting in the secondary. That's really where they need to invest the most.
Kaiser Wilhelm. You're in danger. You're in danger. If you had to wager a week's paycheck, what's most likely to happen? Notre Dame signs Rocco Spindler and Prince Kali, or Notre Dame signs David Abiara?
The former.
What do you think, Pete?
Probably the former.
It's a good question. It's a fun question. I would lean towards the first one because I think they're going to get Prince Kali.
Yeah.
And I'm still more than 50% confident that they're going to get – at one point it was like 95%. Right. I'm still more than 50% confident they're going to get Rocco Spindler.
You're more than 50% hopeful. We don't have an entire podcast about Rocco Spindler going somewhere else. It's really what you are. So that's why we're going former, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, some people say, well, he's a guard. You can get another guard. You're not going to get another guard, at least not at this stage of the recruiting process, nearly as good as that guy.
No, I mean, well, it's like all of these. If they lose Prince Kali, they're not going to find another linebacker like him. If they lose David Abriard, they're not going to find another defensive end like him.
True, true. True, very true. Kaiser Wilhelm, if a large number of FBS conferences make the decision to move to conference-only schedules, do you think Notre Dame has the clout, goodwill to ensure a seat at the ACC's table if it came down to it?
Yes.
I agree. I don't think it's too much of a question.
I mean, people think that Notre Dame's relationship with the ACC is adversarial. I mean, I'm sure that we know that Mike Krzyzewski spoke out when Notre Dame joined in basketball, but Notre Dame is a, they're not a full partner with the ACC, but they're a partner. I mean, anytime there's any conversation that goes on within the conference, Jack Swarbrick's part of the conversation. So Notre Dame's relationship with the ACC is very good. The only thing that we're certain of, provided that things don't go completely haywire, is Notre Dame's going to play all their ACC games this fall.
Yeah, it's like if they lose, if they lose Wisconsin, lose Stanford, lose USC, I have not mined the ACC schedules of teams Notre Dame is not currently scheduled to play, but I'm assuming there are some that play Big Ten teams, and maybe you can find a way to pick up NC State or Florida State, or play Virginia again. I don't really know, but it seems like that's if Notre Dame was looking for potential workarounds in scheduling, picking up another ACC game just as like, hey, do you want a game with good ratings that people care about?
Right.
We'll help you out with that. No,
those are candidates. I think some Big Ten teams could be candidates. BYU definitely is. We've talked about that. because they're scheduled to play Stanford on the weekend. Notre Dame's scheduled to play USC. But I just wanted to, you know, I think there's the perception out there that, you know, Notre Dame is still at odds with ACC, and I'm sure there's some coaches that don't like the idea. The coaches in the ACC don't like the idea of Notre Dame being a part of it. But that's not how the relationship works. They chose to bring Notre Dame into a partial relationship with them. They have a good relationship with the ACC.
Well, yeah, I don't think Pat Narduzzi has a lot of sway with John Swofford's office about Notre Dame stealing bowl bids and putting Pitt in the Quick Lane Bowl while Notre Dame gets the – what is it? I don't even know what's called. It's the Cheez-It Bowl now.
It is the Cheez-It Bowl. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
I would love to imagine Notre Dame playing a football game right now.
Notre Dame's going to the Cheez-It Bowl. Can you imagine?
I was
going to
say, if you'll give me a season, I think Notre Dame should play Clemson in a home-and-home as long as I get to watch some good football this year because they don't need to win a national title to have fun.
Question for Buster Bibbin. Who will be the starting left tackle in 2021 for Notre Dame?
I want to put Josh Lugg there, but then I'm – wondering, like, don't they need a starting right tackle as well?
Yeah, probably.
Well, yeah, Lugg is one of them, right? So Quinn Carroll will be a year removed from surgery in August, a year removed from lost a lot of development with COVID. Look, he got hurt in August and then had COVID, so he is going to be more behind than a regular left tackle. Tosh Baker will be a redshirt freshman. We said how hard that is. But I would say Quinn – so the only other option really is Andrew Kristofic, who would be a third-year player that's been healthy.
Now, there's another option, and it's their starting center.
Yeah, Jarrett Patterson, you think, could be left or right tackle, and then Zeke Carrell. It's probably more likely that Lugg and Patterson are their tackles with Banks and the next best guard and Zeke Carrell as a center.
I mean, it's from a skill set standpoint, I see Tosh Baker, but –
as we said, it's redshirt freshman.
Josh
Lugg, the fifth-year senior.
Exactly. I think Patterson, Carroll, Kristofic. I'm not sure you go beyond that, do you?
Lugg.
Lugg, yeah. But I tend to agree with Pete on that. But, you know, he did a – you know, if you watch Lugg those five games that he started, he did a great job pass blocking.
I think he'll be the starting right tackle still.
Yeah, I think he's obviously
the option to move.
I think so.
So who's your fifth guy? Let's say Lugg, Patterson, Zeke Carrell, and Banks start. Who's your fifth starter in 2021?
You know, I've always been partial to Dirksen, but Dirksen hasn't made a real strong move yet.
Could you protect Carroll a little bit and have him play guard if he's healthy?
I would just take the whoever's is the third tackle and move him to guard.
That's what I meant. Yeah, I think I agree. Third tackle goes to guard. He can become a tackle if he needs to be in the future. Hey, they're all tackles when you get recruited.
None of those guards are Quentin Nelson on the bench right now. They're not even Alex Bars, who is a really good player.
Aaron Banks was listed as a tackle, right?
They all are tackles.
They are all.
Because Mike McGlinchey told us we were all tackles, man. We were all tackles at one point.
Yeah, getting back to a comment you made, Pete, much earlier, I Blake Fisher is a guard. I mean, I don't think he looks like a
Quentin Nelson kind of build.
Yeah, I don't think that you try to force fit that to tackle.
I don't mean to be indelicate, but they tell people they get to play the position they want when they're recruiting them. I mean, Quentin Nelson was told he would play tackle. He became the best guard in the history of the planet. It's okay to move and become a great player somewhere else. Like, he literally was told you'll play tackle. Alex Bars came in and was playing tackle instead of Quentin Nelson at a camp at Notre Dame because Nelson was already signed. And they're playing Alex Bars the whole time at tackle. And it was an unhappy group of Nelsons. And they both played guard and both became better at guard. So it's fine if Blake Fisher plays guard at Notre Dame and starts for 3 years. He'll be cool.
No, that would be – no, and he'll be very good at guard. Pete, remember when we were in Chicago for the camp, the Rivals camp, and I remember making the comment, man, I really like Alex Bars, but, man, I don't think he's a tackle. He's a guard, and, boy, I got some looks for saying that. Nobody wants to hear that, But it's just, it's the reality, man. There's two guards and two tackles on field at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Always. Every snap, always.
It's unlike the offensive when we're trying to fit our three tight ends and four wide receivers. There's going to be two guards and two tackles out there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, our last question wrapping up is from Terry Benedict. And the question, well, first there's a statement, and that is 8 weeks until September 5th. What do you think?
Yesterday was... you know, yesterday being Wednesday, July 8th was probably the most depressing day since the NCAA tournament was canceled from a sporting perspective.
That was worse. That was a bit.
Oh yeah, that was by far worse.
You did say since,
but when you combine like the Ivy League canceling their fall sports with Ohio State and North Carolina suspending their workouts and Stanford cutting 11 sports. That was it was just a bad day. So yesterday I was not feeling good at all. So that's where I am right now.
Is that why your tweet, not good, Bob, came out?
Yeah. Not great, Bob.
Not great, Bob. Yeah. I think September 5th or hopefully 6th, Notre Dame will play Navy. I still think they'll play that game. I like the idea of playing on Sunday.
So I also feel that. I feel like Saturday. Notre Dame will play Navy, but yesterday was rough.
Right. I'm just trying to keep it positive, and the fifth or sixth they'll play Navy. I hope it's the sixth, so we all get to watch football on the fifth, wall to wall, and just cover a game on Sunday. If Jack Swarbrick's listening, please make that happen. And if this said no, Clemson, what do you think? I wouldn't know what to say.
Yeah, I think they'll play Navy. You know, and Pete, you mentioned one of your guys from The Athletic wrote about revenues generated by conference. And the Ivy League was at 30 million. The Big Ten was a billion.
Yeah.
So
it's like, that's lost, like the risk versus reward. Like the Ivy League has the same risk as everybody else. Well, actually more risk because they can't afford testing and very little reward. Like the Big Ten has less risk because they can test and have facilities and all that. And they have a huge reward.
So I bring that up because I don't necessarily think that, although I felt exactly the way you felt yesterday, and it was in last Thursday's Thursday Thoughts that I wrote for the first time, man, I'm really discouraged about the way this is going. And then yesterday was like piling on. That was incredible. But my point about the Ivy League is that they're not as dependent upon, they're not anywhere close as dependent upon the revenue generated by a football season in the fall. So it's easier for them to make that call.
Yeah. And they do not have the capacity to test their players the way that Notre Dame and like higher end schools can. Like if the news of, to me, in some ways, the news about Ohio State was more troubling than the Ivy League, because Ohio State has every advantage to test and quarantine and like keep people isolated and you know, keeping their facilities clean. And the fact that they ran into a situation where they felt like they had to suspend workouts, like to me, that was more troubling than Columbia not playing football this fall.
And every instinct to protect the football season at all costs for Ohio State too, with good reason. Yeah. That was why I thought when I read that was the first one when I read it. I thought the Ivy League news was coming for a week.
Yeah.
When I read the Ohio State news, I was just, that kind of blew me away.
We had a subscriber comment that last week's Thursday Thoughts, everyone was negative. We're living in a very negative world right now as it relates to all the topics and things that we deal with and our livelihood. So looking for some good news, but hard
to find.
And
now we're moving. We're piling on, man. We're moving all the favorite tackles to guard. And pretty soon they're not going to
be. Yeah, but they got a verbal commitment from Joe Alt.
They won't be 25-year tackles. Good news. Starters. Best 20 tackle he's seen in 25 years. Started guarding
Joe Alt. I will promise that Joe Alt's verbal commitment is in Priester's Thursday Thought, so not every mention.
You were positive about it?
I was, because I think he'll be a good football. You. Yeah, no, I was. But your points about three-star offensive linemen is a little bit sobering, so I got that as well. We appreciate everybody joining us for Irish Illustrated Insider on July 9th. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.